like this group of players, and this feels a lot like 13.
It's time for the Neil Huntington Show every Sunday on the Pirates Baseball Network. For all Pirates updates, breaking news and information, as well as chances to win unique prizes, follow the Pirates on Twitter at Pirates, add Pirates to Snapchat, like us on Facebook at Facebook.com/Pirates, and on Instagram at Pittsburgh Pirates. Find out more at PittsburghPirates.com/connect. It's the Neil Huntington Show every Sunday on the Pirates Radio Network.
Welcome to a Kids Sunday and the final game before the All-Star break here at PNC Park. It's the Pirates and the Milwaukee Brewers playing the rubber match of their three-game series. Greg Brown here in the booth, joined by the Pirates general manager, Neil Huntington, and we can take a look back at the week. We can take a look back at the first half and the limited time that we have, Neil. But first, again, this is a weekly occurrence. I notice it's not just the Pirates, and the Pirates have not whined about this at all. The numbers may show that the Pirates have the most players on the injured list, but players are going down it seems to me anyway, Neil, a record pace. And all the talk about home runs and the strikeouts, but I don't know how much attention is being paid to all these players that are going down. And I just wonder what your thoughts are about that. Why is that occurring at what appears to be a record pace throughout baseball?
Yeah, it is. And we haven't taken a hard look at the numbers, but when you look at the Yankees with 10 guys on the 60-day IL, we have six, I think, on the 60-day. We've carried 10 on the IL for large parts of the season. I think there's an average of somewhere around six players per team. That's a lot of days missed to injured list time. There's a huge number of reasons. The easy one is, well, it's a 10-day IL now, so it's not as penalizing to put a player on the IL, which in some ways is great because that player that's out 6 to 8 days, you don't have to play short, and you're not also – that player is probably not feeling pressure to get back if it were a 15-day IL. So that's probably the first thing. The second thing is we are much quicker to diagnose and to be aggressive with treatment of injured players. Back when Bob played and Rock played, you had a sore back and you played through it. You might miss a game or two, but you played through it in this day and age. And I'm not saying it's the player's fault because we as an industry are overly protective of our players, but we're much quicker to shut guys down now than we used to be. Agents and players and in some organizations will run to MRIs much quicker than we used to. I guarantee that Bob pitched through an injury that should have required a 4 or 6 week shutdown back in the day because it's just what you did. And now, or he had a 2 week shutdown and got better and then pitched and never had anything because of it. But if they'd gone to do an MRI, oftentimes you find incidental findings, or anytime you have some soreness, there's something that will show up on an MRI or an ultrasound. So we're much quicker to diagnose. We're much quicker to shut down. Players are much quicker to ask for and or a diagnosis and or a shutdown. There has to be something to the fact that players in this day and age really don't take any time off. They work 12 months a year now, and there may just be a volume overload. Players take more swings today than they took 30 years ago in season and out of season. They throw more in season and out of season than they did 30 years ago. There's no real recovery time for players, so we're continuing to study what should a good offseason look like, and do you stop throwing altogether, or there's an opposite school of thought where you just keep the body in motion versus completely changing into a lift offseason mode, but you need to stay baseball specific. So there's a huge number of factors, Brown. I mean, we could probably spend an entire show or two working through all of the factors that may be contributing, and the hardest part of this is there is not a way to truly know what is the individual factor. There's traumatic injuries where there's collisions like we saw last night, or between Marte and Gonzalez, that take players off the field, and then there's one-time strain where one awkward swing, but then there's repetitive use trauma that also plays a factor. So there's just so much that goes into it. Our guys are continuing to study it. We're trying to stay out front of it. For years, we've tried to give players proactive time off to try to keep them stronger and healthier. And in some cases, it seems like it's really worked. In others, not so much.
Well, with that in mind, we've got some players want to ask you about. I saw the Jameson Taillon this morning out I didn't actually see him throwing. I saw him talking to Ray Searidge, I guess, after he was throwing, and Todd Tomsic and others. Do we have any idea as to how he felt? Because he really seemed, Neil, like he was so encouraged by just today. You could almost, at least from my standpoint, almost get a sense that he was
feeling just better, and his mood was even better the past week.
It has been, and there's no question about it, and that's the hard part with injuries. Again, we've talked, I feel like every week we talk about the gray areas of injuries, and even MRIs are not black and white, and two different doctors or three different or four different doctors may look at the same MRI and have a slightly or in some cases a significantly different perspective, and that's where we work to treat the symptoms. And yes, we want to identify what is theoretically wrong, what we feel pretty strong about is wrong, but we don't always know until you actually get in there. If you had to go do surgery, there are times where the doctor, the operating surgeon, expects one thing and he gets something fairly different when he goes in to operate. In Jameson's case, again, we still are optimistic, and you're right, Jameson's continued to get opinions, and for a while we were hoping he was going to be ready to start throwing at 4 weeks, and the body just didn't recover the way he or we had hoped. And then it became 6 weeks, and again, we hadn't recovered the way he or we had hoped. And then we got to 8 weeks, and this last couple of weeks, there's been some really steady progression. He's feeling better, whether it's in everyday life or in baseball-type activities, and we will. We'll get him out, get him throwing, and see how the arm responds. Hopefully, as he's feeling now, we'll continue to build good day upon good day.
And we also saw last night Corey Dickerson pulled from the ball game. He did not go on the injured list today, but groin discomfort. Do we have any kind of an update on how he's doing? I know you brought up Kevin Kramer. Just in case, I guess.
We did. If Corey's unavailable today, we'd be at a three-player bench, and that's really challenging for a manager, especially when one of his better non-player pinch hitters went on the IL and Stephen Brault, and his other pretty good non-player pinch hitter is pitching today. So we took away some depth off the bench, even in an odd situation. And so we wanted to try to fortify the bench if Corey wasn't available today. We were carrying essentially a nine-man bullpen last night, and so we were able to option a reliever, go back to an eight-man bullpen. We've got some guys that ideally we'd like to try to stay away from depending upon the game today, and so we'll go from there. But we brought Kevin up to fortify the bench. He's versatile. He's playing all over the field in AAA, left-handed bat off the bench. In Corey's situation, we'll see how he is. It's going to be kind of a game-time decision, but we'd much rather err on the side of conservatism and have him not risk injuring this more than it is right now, especially going into 4 days off for the All-Star break. We'll stay in touch and see where he is at as we head to post All-Star break time.
What did you hear, or what do you know, I should say, about Kevin Kramer and how he has performed as a utility player, second, third, left, short, right, down at AAA Indy?
Yeah, and again, I always the label that we throw on guys, Josh Harrison wasn't the utility player back in the day when he was playing all over the field. He was a regular that was playing all over the field. And as we were doing with, as we've done several times in the past, we're doing it with some guys. We're doing it with Kevin Newman at times last year. We've done it with Gonzalez. We've done it with most of our young players. We've bounced them all over the diamond, not because we're creating utility players, but we're creating opportunities for them to make a major league team, help a major league team win until they can earn regular major league at-bats, and that's what Kevin's doing. He's bouncing, playing second, third, plays third well, plays second fine. The outfield, he's going to make the plays he's supposed to make out there. There may be some intricacies or a unique play that challenges him, but he's an athlete and again, a good left-handed hitter. So he's done a nice job as he's worked through that, and we were choosing between Jason Martin and Kevin Kramer, and Jason swinging the bat well here as of late, but it's just more of a pure outfielder, whereas Kevin on a short bench with his ability to play the infield and the outfield we thought was an asset for the club today.
Neil, how about Stephen Brault? What's the latest on him?
We'll be in that period of no throw, whether that's 10 days or so, reassess, which will be in Chicago, or the second series coming out of the break in St. Louis, and just kind of see where we are at that point in time. It feels like it's just some shoulder soreness at this point. We'll work through it, give it some time to work itself out, and hopefully get him back on a mound here sooner than later. But 2 days away, we're still early in the process.
In your history, is it, when a guy says at the end of the game, he said, "Yeah, I just had trouble getting loose. It was tight." Is that, are you more optimistic when you hear something like that?
You hope it's fatigue. As well as Stephen's pitched on the surface, it hasn't been the most efficient of outings, and and you know, averaging 18, 19, 20, 21 pitches per inning. So it hasn't been an easy workload for him, even though he's had success. So the thought is hopefully here just some fatigue and a little bit of inflammation in there, and we can knock that out and get him back out here. Again, the challenge with pitching is any downtime creates additional build back up time. So the downtime is essentially doubled, if it's a longer downtime, then it can be tripled. So it's not like we expect him to pitch in Chicago or Milwaukee, but is it a matter of is it toward the middle of the end of the month, or is it longer than that?
We'll continue with the Pirates general manager, the Neil Huntington Show, coming your way from PNC Park. Pirates Brewers today, final game of the first half of the year, and lots to talk about with Neil Huntington as we continue on the Pirates Baseball Network. We're back with the Neil Huntington Show, Pirates and Brewers today here at PNC Park, talking about some of the injuries and some players trying to work their way back from the injured list, including Eric Gonzalez and Gregory Polanco. Eric Gonzalez still kind of going through his spring training, Neil, so it'll be a while. But in terms of Gregory Polanco, plan to play him this weekend, and then, of course, AAA will have their All-Star break. It's only 3 days. Polanco then would return to Indy for a few at-bats. And if all goes well, do you anticipate that he could return to the Pirates shortly after next weekend, or is he also in need of just a bunch of at-bats?
No, in Gregory's case, it hasn't been that long of a period down. As he was getting some work in prior to going out on the rehab, he was feeling really good, both health-wise and swing-wise. The reports from Indianapolis have been that he's in the box, and he's a man in that box, and he's looking to do some damage, and he's seeing the ball well. The results are what the results are, but he feels good. He's seeing the ball well. And after today and Thursday and probably Friday, we'll take a look and see where he is. You don't want to leave him down there if just to get at bats, but if he feels like he needs a few more, then we obviously have the ability to do that, pending the Corey Dickerson situation.
And then you'll be back in the same boat you were in before. Too many players, too many healthy players, Neil. too many outfielders. What are you going to do?
Yeah, it's a good situation to have. Sometimes you wish you had too much pitching. But no, and the challenge is all of these guys want to play every day. All of these guys are worthy of playing every day. Melky, at his age, probably needs a few more days here and there. But, you know, I don't know. That's where we're going to have to get creative in keeping all of these guys sharp and all of these guys in play. But it's pretty good to have a bat of that quality or two bats of that quality coming off the bench to help us win games.
Do you ever get to the point, Neil, especially now as we approach July 31st, do you start to think, you know, we're going to have this log jam, end of July is coming, other teams know this, you know, I better move a guy, but not that you want to, because they're all really good players, but do you ever think that mindset that in order to free somebody up, I may have to move a guy?
Yeah, the challenge with this game is that the second you think you have too many of one thing, injury, and you make a trade to benefit from your depth, there's an injury, there's performance struggles, there's something that all of a sudden what you thought was a point of depth is now a point of weakness, and it can happen in a heartbeat. And if there's something that makes sense, absolutely, we will be open to it, but it's not something that we're going to force just because we have five guys for three spots.
Francisco Cervelli, talked to him the other day. We talked, you and I, last week on your show about his mood, which has been much better. And I think for the first time, he publicly conceded. He said in so many words, I still have my mind set on being a catcher, but I want to do what I can to help the team. And later I asked him, I said, you're getting ready to go down to Indy, it sounded like, and play the infield. And he pretty much agreed. And he looks, you know, from the untrained eye, looks pretty good. The soft hands, quick release, strong throws, whether he's a third. I saw him taking ground balls at second and short. So what about Francisco Cervelli? Are you at that point yet where you and he have kind of agreed, okay, let's go from there, and then down the road we'll think catching maybe?
Yeah, we're continuing to work through the process with Francisco, and one step in that process is getting him opportunities out from behind home plate. Catching up with him yesterday after he came off to the field, just absolutely dripping sweat from head to toe. He had a dark gray sweatshirt on that was supposed to be light gray, but it was dark because it was just drenched. And this man is working as hard as he possibly can to to be playable at third, short, second, first, right. I don't know how much of the time he'll see in the middle of the diamond, but he went to first base after 4 or 5 days of working there and looked like he played there forever. And he has infield in his background. He loves taking ground balls at short on his own over the years, so he's always done it. So this is not something that's completely brand new to him. He is a good athlete. He does have great hands. He does have the ability to throw the ball, and obviously the bat is something that we would love to try to work back onto this club. It's just a matter of working through the process with him, the evaluation, the assessment, getting the best opinions that we possibly can, giving him the best information, trying to help him make as good a decision, but then also putting him in a position to be successful as we look forward. And yes, some of that might include places not behind home plate.
It would make sense, would it not, Neil, that he would be, he's cleared to take ground balls and hit, he just can't do the catching stuff. So is he almost cleared to play in games outside of the catching situation?
We're getting there. There's a really good process in place via Major League Baseball for the concussion protocol, and we're honoring that. But then there's continued work going on behind the scenes to try to help Francisco get the best possible information to help him make the best possible decision for himself and hopefully for this organization.
Neil, what did you think of Dario Agrizal? Clint Hurdle saying that the rotation for now, after the All-Star break in Chicago, will be Chris Archer, Jordan Lyles, Trevor Williams, Joe Musgrove, and then Dario Agrizal.
In this day and age of 96 at the top of the zone and wipeout sliders that are all about swing and miss, and which is a great thing, by the way, but all about chase and all about fooling hitters, to watch a good old-school pitcher come out and induce contact and get some soft ground balls, get some chases on his slider, elevate the four-seamer with intent, not live at the top of the zone, attack the zone, work quickly, throw strikes, keep them off balance. It's kind of fun to watch somebody just go out and pitch and pitch the way he has, and he's done a really nice job. So our thought was, let's continue to roll with him and give him this opportunity to show us that he can continue to get good major league hitters out.
And you called up yesterday Luis Escobar, and when he takes the mound, it will be for the first time in his big league career. He started this year at Bradenton and was promoted in early May to AAA. Tell us his story, Luis Escobar.
Well, a highly touted prospect because of the velocity that'll sit in the mid-90s. He's got a really good combination of breaking balls, a power curveball, and a good slider. Has been a starter for us in the past, but was not real efficient with his pitches and would be a guy that would run up a pitch count pretty quickly and struggle to get through 4 and 5 unless he was just dominating that day. And so we wanted to try to transition him to the pen to see if that would be a better role for him. And rather than do that at a higher level, we opted to go back to Bradenton, which, again, he knows he's better than. So that was just a matter of getting ready to learn how to pitch as a reliever. He did that. We jumped into Indianapolis, and he's had some really good results there. Made some spot starts out of necessity down there because he does have that ability. So he brings a guy that has pitches that both in terms of quality and quantity. And again, despite having a 9-man pen with Agrizal pitching yesterday, with the fact that I don't think any of our starters have gotten through the fifth or sixth inning coming into this month, so we were pretty taxed in that bullpen, and so we went to get some pitches for Escobar. And Durapau had gone 1 inning the night before, went 1 inning last night, really didn't want to ask him to go 3 days in a row for the first time at the major league level. So we felt with Escobar we've got some pitches, and why not? Let's see how this stuff plays because he does have some weapons.
Neil, is Mitch Keller experiencing kind of some inconsistency, or was that just a blip on the radar screen his last time out?
We think it's probably a blip on the radar screen, and you know, sometimes good pitchers give up some runs, and he's continuing to work to utilize his weapons and understand how is he going to be the most effective pitcher that he can be. And candidly, there's probably a little bit of wonderment, how come he's not in the big leagues? Because he's done well, and his 3 starts in the big leagues, that's what we did not want to do, was bring him up and back. And this last time through, again, out of necessity, we felt like we needed to bring him up, and because we'd lost 2 starters in a matter of a short period of time, and was not the ideal plan for Mitch. And again, our goal is that he's going to be a really good major league starting pitcher, and it's just a matter of time.
So ideally, the next time you bring him up, you'd really like him to stay here, not go through the yo-yo thing.
Ideally, the hard part is when you're 3.5 games out of a division lead, winning does take huge priority, and Dyer Agrizal has done a nice job. And if our next time is a spot start again, it will be a spot start again. But, yes, in a perfect world, if we were to draw it up, he would take that next step and be ready to come up here and hopefully never go back to the minor leagues again.
With that in mind, we're going to talk about the Pirates within striking distance of the Chicago Cubs and the Brewers. Everybody is in this division. We'll continue with the Pirates general manager on the Pirates Baseball Network. We're back on a Kids Sunday. Rivendell ice cream given away to the youngsters on this Sunday as the Pirates and Brewers meet in the finale of the series. Rubber match, big game for the Bucks as they try to creep closer to the top spot of the National League Central Division. Let's step aside right now, allow our stations to identify themselves. Want to let you know the Pirates return to PNC Park, host their cross-state rivals, the Philadelphia Phillies. First homestand after the All-Star break is Friday night, July the 19th. 3 with the Phillies and then 4 with the St. Louis Cardinals. Go to Pirates.com for tickets. We step aside on the Pirates Baseball Network. Pirates general manager Neil Huntington here, and the All-Star break is upon us. The home run derby tomorrow, it'll be Josh Bell against Ronald Acuna Jr. of the Atlanta Braves in one seed, and then, of course, the All-Star game itself. And, Neil, you had hinted last week. I think you already knew that Felipe Vasquez was going to wind up in the All-Star game for a second straight year. He was told that officially yesterday, and obviously very deserving.
Absolutely, did not know that he would end up, but actually the Sunday show of the All-Star announcements is always a tough one because I know who they are, but I can't give it away. And I knew on that Sunday that Felipe had not been named to the initial group, but knew that there was a good chance that there's always replacements and believed that he was more than deserving to be one of those replacements. And obviously it's worked out that way. He continues to throw the ball well. As every reliever does, there's an occasional blip, but continues to throw the ball well and continues to be one of the best relievers in baseball.
In years past, you have, I think, flipped a coin whether you're the game or not. I think sometimes you brought your kids. Will you attend either the Derby Futures game? It's close enough. The All-Star game, the Futures game, the Home Run Derby, what will you do for the next 4 days?
Well, my son is now 20, and I've been fortunate enough to be in this role for 12 years, and for 12 years he's asked me to go to the Futures game, and we've never gone because of a Sunday home game or a Sunday radio show, and because the Futures game is typically always in the afternoon, but it's 2 hours down the road. It's played tonight, so I'm going to bounce after our game tonight back to Cleveland and take my son, who's been asking for 12 years to go to the Futures game. He's a prospect nut. He knows the industry really well, and excuse me, and my oldest son has been asking for the same time. So I've got two boys that have been looking at me for 12 years to go to the Futures game, and this will be the first one we get to. The home run hitting contest probably was not really on my radar until Josh got into it, and I know my sons want to go, and then the All-Star game, again, where it's just next door here, we'll plan to go to the All-Star game as well and sit way in the right field corner and enjoy the game and the home run derby as well as the Futures game.
So you'll go as a fan then and not as a general manager for all of those events, or is it going to be hard for you to sit, because you normally don't do this, you just said you've not actually attended the Futures game. How difficult is it to sit there with your two kids and not watch all these prospects, including your own?
Well, with their knowledge base, it's going to be as if I'm scouting the game, because they'll be breaking them down, and the guys that they're excited about, they're both really sharp baseball minds, and they've grown up and been around some smart people and have asked them some really good questions and have a good feel for the game. So it will be as a fan, but it will be as a fan that's breaking down the swings and the deliveries and the arm actions of the guys in the Futures game with my sons, and they'll probably be doing a lot more breaking down than I will.
I know we've talked about this in the past with this. It used to be many, many years ago, of course, that's where a lot of business took place. GMs would gather for the festivities, pre-game, post-game, and so on, and maybe lay some groundwork for future transactions. But you know, I think you've told us in the past that this day and age with technology and so forth, it really isn't necessary actually to be at that game as a general manager.
It really is not, and the World Series is the same. The World Series used to be the kickoff to the offseason. Now it is a very small number of GMs that go to the All-Star game or go to the World Series. As via text, via email, via phone call. We're in constant contact, and the chatter is picking up, and we don't necessarily need to be in one spot. I mean, there are times where I think the winter meetings are a little bit of a waste of time, and I get that they're exciting for the industry, but even when I first started this, or when I first started going to the winter meetings 20-some years ago, clubs would go meet, and you went from room to room, and five or maybe in some cases 10 people would go, and they'd meet with the Reds, or they'd meet with the Dodgers, or they'd meet with the Astros. In this day and age, we do as much business by phone. Even though we're all in the same hotel, we do as much business by phone as we do by going to the room to room. And sometimes the room meetings are not as productive as we get together when it's just the general manager and I on the phone, or two assistant general managers on the phone. So, there's not the necessity to go as there used to be.
And we'll finish up with the Bucco GM, the Neil Huntington Show from PNC Park on the Pirates Baseball Network. We're back and finishing up with the Neil Huntington Show here at PNC Park. Pirates Brewers, the Bucks, a chance to win another series, took 3 of 4 against the Chicago Cubs. They're 3.5 back this highly competitive National League Central Division as advertised, even though just 4.5 games separate the top club, the Cubs, and the last place team currently, the Cincinnati Reds. Reds still 4 back. The Pirates are 2 back. And, Neil, not to be Debbie Downer, but maybe play devil's advocate, it's all well and good that the Pirates are winning some series, but when all is said and done, at the All-Star break, even if the Pirates win today, you're talking about basically a 500 club. So am I wrong there?
No, and I can understand the fact that there's a lot of 500 teams, and I've even seen it written that the National League is just a collection of mediocre teams, and we don't see it that way. We see the National League as a really deep group of teams, and as a result, we beat up on each other, and there's not a 100-loss team in this National League Central. There's very few 100-loss teams in the National League in general, so there are not teams to beat up on and to pad your schedule. Or to pad your win column, there's a lot of good teams, and as a result, we beat up on each other. And sure, there are times where we haven't played well, Chicago hasn't played well, St. Louis hasn't played well, Milwaukee, but every team essentially has that, except your 100-win teams, and even in that stretch, they typically have a tough week or two. So the key is getting to the postseason. That's the goal. We don't take that for granted that we're on the outside looking in right now, but we're a good week, especially with our schedule as we look forward. We'll play a lot of these central teams. We're in a mix of a really important stretch coming out. We get Chicago and St. Louis, and we need to go do some damage. There's no doubt about that. That you want your destiny in your own hands. We've created a little bit of an uphill battle, but we're continuing to slowly climb that. We need to continue to climb that, and we need to continue to beat these teams that we're pursuing. And at the end of the day, if we get into the postseason, we don't care if we're 500 or 98 wins. We're in the postseason. We're in a position to potentially win a World Series if we can take care of our business, and the chatter about being 500 doesn't matter. We're in a position where we're 3.5 games out. We can decrease the deficit today. We can go decrease the deficit in Chicago, go decrease the deficit in St. Louis, and get after it and put ourselves in a better position.
Neil, look forward to seeing you next Sunday. Enjoy 4 days. Enjoy the Futures game starting tonight.
We will, Brian. Thanks.
The Neil Huntington Show will come your way next Sunday. And as we said, the Pirates will be at Wrigley Field in Chicago taking on those Cubs. But first things first, it's time to take on the Milwaukee Brewers. We'll have our pregame show coming up next here on the Pirates Baseball Network.